This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
The Thursday edition of Overdrive. Some would call this the back nine of the week. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes once again. Back alongside with Dave Pullen. If we're on the back nine, that means Dave Pullen's about one under for the day. Still got the same ball he's used all season. The rest of his group is just looking at him going, I'm on my fifth or sixth ball. I wish I could play like Pooley. But
it's not pretty right now, Mark Rowe. It is not pretty right now. Well, I don't know why, but it's just not pretty.
It's been pretty for the
golf game is not happening.
Well, you're too focused on the restart of the season. See that you're a professional. You know you have business to do.
Maybe I've got one eye straying. Maybe I've got one eye wandering. I don't know, but I don't know. I'm playing the most I've played early in the year, and I'm just my expectations are higher, and I just am what I am. I'm not going to be better. Well, it's frustrating.
Well. You, for the next 3 hours,
I don't know where to go with it.
For the next 3 hours, we can do a Q&A on your golf game and how we can fix it. But we can, we can also
it's mental, not physical, buddy.
Well, usually is with golf. And speaking of golf, a couple Canadians in contention. Adam Hadwin, I believe, is still the leader. Last time I checked, Nick Taylor was one shot back. The Canadians have done very well to begin the part two of the 2020 PGA Tour season. I know we didn't get a ton of the first part of the season underway, but when it's been one of the few games in town, and we'll get to the MLS beginning last night, but it's been refreshing to see Canadians doing so well, and it's been fun to watch.
It really has. This is Nick Taylor's first outing of the year, actually, and both he and Bob Weeks had an interesting post today. Both he and Adam Hadwin played at the same course in BC. So when they were number one and two, Bob Weeks actually referred to it as the club championship back in British Columbia, except it's on a major stage. And Muirfield is one of my favorite golf courses in the world. I've had an opportunity to play it a number of times. And normally each year, the tournament is in May, and the week plus before the tournament, I go down with two groups of guys, and we get to play the course 2 days in a row, like a full week and a half before the tournament. And it is absolutely spectacular. And every detail of the place is so Jack Nicklaus. And it is just so impeccable. We stay right on site, and every detail from the clubhouse to the practice range, you can just feel Jack Nicklaus's presence. And so it's a really fun tournament for me to watch. Now, they're there 2 weeks in a row.
I was going to say, it's kind of cool that, and very different, that back-to-back weeks they're playing the same course, and they will try to change the course in a way within a week. That sounds like
They can.
Yeah.
That's the scary part, is they can. And this week is the softer version, believe me.
So the scores should be better this weekend.
They should be, and they've had rain, so it's softer, but it'll be ramped up. They talked about the greens running about 11 to 11.5 on the stint meter, and next week rolling them at 13 to 13.5. So this is the proverbial, you know, put a ball on the hood of your car and see if you can stop it.
Yeah.
That's how fast those greens will be.
So that's going on this weekend. You'll be able to see rounds 3 and 4 on TSN and CTV2. And we saw another league begin kind of the restart here, MLS, and you know, there's been issues. FC Dallas is out. We found out today Nashville is out. Too many positive tests. But we did see Orlando and Miami last night, and it seemed like, you know, there's a lot of people watching it, not just to watch live sports and not just to watch soccer, but to see how are they pulling this off and what is this like. And you know, I thought they did a really good job. The television production was great. There was an element of I feel like I'm watching someone's men's league game late on a Wednesday night because you can hear everything. But it gave us a little bit of a taste, Pooley, of what it's going to be like watching hockey in Toronto and Edmonton without fans and hearing the communication on the ice or between coaches and players and what you hope it's like in Orlando for the NBA. So it was, you know, they got one match in last night. They've begun a couple today. There was one at 9 a.m. in Toronto FC on Sunday. So they're underway.
Yeah, and I believe they've postponed another one, correct? I believe they've postponed one. So not that they've knocked them out, but they've postponed them. and you know they're going to go from there with that. But it's just good to see live sports back in each one of these. You know, selfishly, I look at it as a test model for hockey. I looked at that, you know, even those two little golf outings they did with the celebrities playing, with the quarterbacks playing, and that first match. And you just looked at it as learn something, get some of the kinks knocked out, and then go from there. And, you know, that's what they've been trying to do. And so to see soccer come back and successfully play a game last night, and what an emotional start to that game with all of the players out on the field in the 8 minutes and 47 seconds. And just, you know, I
the,
mean,
the
really
power invoked, of that silence.
Oh, you know? Boy, oh boy. The silence was, you know, as you were watching it, and it was overwhelming. It really was, how long it was. But also, you know, it invoked memories certainly of Tommy Smith and John Carlos in the 68 Olympics. It really did. I mean, it was very similar sort of stance to that. And, you know, and all the leagues are going to be looked at very closely and how they're going to react. I know that the Raptors pulled up today.
Black Lives Matter.
In Black Lives Matter buses with the Raptors insignia painted on them. And, you know, another powerful statement. So it's going to continue. And, you know, as the talk comes back about whether or not it's the right time to go back with everything going on from a, you know, a social injustice standpoint, it's also a pretty powerful platform. It really is, you know, if used in that manner, in a positive manner, to call attention to it.
Yeah, and there has been an expectations that the NBA would be the leaders on this because you know, everything from player empowerment in that league and someone like LeBron having a voice and not being scared to be political. And it's not just LeBron, but he's been a leader on a lot of these fronts. But also, there are more, you know, there are more black players in the NBA than the NHL. And, you know, the question's been brought up. And I know you discussed it on First Up earlier today with Landsberg and Kaz. You know, what will that league that is predominantly white do when they want to support this cause and they want to support those who are affected in the game?
You know, I spoke this morning about it, and I spoke about the awareness factor of many players who were just exposed to it for the first time on a continuous basis. And Tyler Seguin was one who was very vocal early on, coming out of Dallas now, coming out of Texas, and Jonathan Taves, another one out of Chicago, and in environments where it's new to them. And, you know, I always reflect to a couple of the kids that I brought in from really small towns in Canada when I was at Notre Dame, one from Foam Lake, Saskatchewan, one from Crow's Nest Pass, Alberta. And how could they know, you know, about all those social factors in the towns they grew up in? It simply wasn't a factor. Mm-hmm. And so, but they were willing to learn and willing to get involved in it. And I think that's the awareness standpoint. I was also watched Emmanuel Ocho, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, and he had P.K. Subban, Lindsey Vonn on in episode 5, and just really, really good stuff, really great communication and questions asked and answered. And that's what it's about. It continues to be a learning experience. But as the athletes go back to work, the platform that was given MLS last night, the platform that will be given to the NBA, that will be given to the NHL, can all be used in an effective manner.
We'll have Mike Golic Jr. join us at 5:30. Great host for ESPN Radio, and you know we're seeing so much happen in the United States. And he's a former college football player from a certain school in Indiana that I can't remember the name of, but I'm sure Pooley, you and him can talk about
small, quiet Catholic college.
Yeah,
in
that your alma mater, and get into that. But yeah, like it's we've seen obviously football take a stand. We saw the reaction with Drew Brees and his comments, and then more recently what DeSean Jackson has said and what Steven Jackson has said. But it'll be good to get his take, not just on the professional level, but now, and this is breaking within the last hour, the Big Ten is saying that they're going to have a conference-only season, and they intend to get going in the fall, whether or not they can complete the season or not. But it looks like they're going to try, and I'm sure right behind them is the SEC and the ACC and the Pac-12. But what do you do at the college level? Because we've seen players who have been outspoken a month or two ago, Florida State, and players from that program. These are not millionaires. They hope to be millionaires one day, but you can understand that it's a little more difficult for an 18, 19-year-old to speak out on this, who's also trying to protect their career.
And Mark, just as we look to the pro sports to lead the way, and you know, we look to golf, we've looked to the MLS now, we're looking to the NBA, to the NHL certainly. What is baseball going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then the big one in the fall, what's the NFL going to do? But in college sports, football not only drives the bus, but they drive the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Financially for all the other sports. And arguably the most shocking statement to me today was out of Stanford. It's always considered one of the elite. They have the second most men's and women's sports. They operate 35 men's and women's sports. I believe Ohio State might have one more than they do. And, you know, they get a lot of the great Olympic athletes there. Their facilities are just astounding. And they're dropping a total of 11 male and female sports, dropping them.
Mm-hmm.
And without the income that football creates, and, you know, everyone will say, well, you know, football is this, football is that. It's too big. It's too powerful. But I know just from having been, you know, in the college environment I was in, it drives all the other sports, and the financing it provides lets a lot of kids play major Division I sports with financing for not only for scholarship potential, but for facilities. And the, you know, everyone would look at schools with billion-dollar endowments, multiple mm-hmm. billion-dollar endowments like Stanford, and say, well, why can't they just go to the endowment? It's not the way it works. The endowments are clearly earmarked for specific scholarships, specific classes, specific funding of professors. You can't just go in there and take money out for sports, and that's not the way it works. And it'll be good questions to chat with Mike Golic Jr. about, you know, in his knowledge of college sports and what this is going to impact long term. And some of the sports eliminated today, wrestling, fencing, mm-hmm. field hockey, rowing,
volleyball.
Sailing, volleyball, men's wrestling. And so that's some, you know, as soon as you eliminate a women's sport, you've got to eliminate a men's sport, because mm-hmm. Title IX dictates that whatever opportunities the males get, the females get in U.S. college sports. And so it's going to be a really trying time, and the trickle down from the major sport of football to all of the other sports. I also, you know, conversed with a Division I baseball coach today, and he's really concerned. He's got a big-time program at one of the top SEC schools in the country. And I was actually checking in with him about Austin Martin with the Blue Jays, because he played in his conference. And, you know, but they talk about the funding and how this is going to affect all of sports for a long, long time.
Yeah, you know, you think of just 6 months ago, you know, every sport, every league has their projections when it comes to revenue and how they're going to play things. And by no means is anyone thinking our whole minor league system is going to be kind of like thrown off to the side and we don't know what it will look like. You think of baseball and how many teams, you know, the Blue Jays have in their farm system, and that's going to be cut down. Even when we do get back to the quote-unquote normalcy of sports, I don't think it'll look the same. And college sports, it's the same thing. You know, like, what will college sports look like in 2 or 3 years? Will some of those teams come back in at Stanford and other colleges? You hope so, because you think of how many Olympians, you know, become these great athletes because they're able to go. And it's in Canada as well. But they're afforded those opportunities to get better and get to that next level. Because of the system that they're a part of. And when you take away gymnastics or wrestling, where do those athletes go now? That's the big question.
Oh, it's the four-year gap between Olympics. Even if you're going to compete in two Olympics in a row, you've got a four-year gap. And that's where the elite schools attract. You know, we had a couple of big-time fencers, and they would participate in Olympics and then essentially go to college for 3 years and prepare for that fourth year for the Olympics again. And, you know, those platforms are going to be gone for them. But the minor league teams that feed the NHL teams, mm-hmm. and maybe not so much in basketball, although the D-League has grown, but the American Hockey League is an integral part of what the success of the NHL
is.
You
would know that.
And the pipeline, you know, that teams provide and have to provide through the course of a year. And when you look at Stanley Cup champions, you look at how many players over the last year to 2 to 3 years have gone through their minor league system, had success there, and then graduated to the NHL team. Where's that going to go?
And just think of the team in this city. You know, a Maple Leafs team that has been up against the cap for a while and will continue to be, and with the cap being, you know, flatlined for at least the next 2 years and probably longer, and you have all these stars that are signed to big deals, you need guys to step in from the Marlies. And whether that could be Rasmus Sandin, but hey, if Rasmus Sandin is a success, he's eventually going to want to be paid. And so you're gonna. It continues to happen. It's the system that the NHL, in a way, is built on, and we don't know. You know, and I could ask you, but I know you don't know either. You probably have a better understanding with that league. But what does the development of the NHL and hockey in general look like when we get back to going? I don't think it looks the same in the fall as it did last fall.
It very well may not. And, you know, those players that are signed to entry-level deals, that are signed to minimum NHL contracts in the 700s, are going to be critical to the success of teams. And they always have been, but not to the magnitude they're going to be now. It's going to be a have and have not league. And that's going to be create an interesting balance. It's going to create for interesting locker rooms. You know, you're going to have guys making $11 million and guys making $700,000. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be times when you need the $700,000 player to be to be way more than he has ever performed before in order to be successful. You know, it's a real challenge. It's the magnitude. You know, we watch it every day in the communities we live in. We see restaurants that have thrived for years and aren't yet open, or are open with a very small patio bearing and trying to just hang on, and you're just cheering for them in every way possible. And, you know, we reflect on how it affects sports, but it affects everybody and everything right now. Mm-hmm. And there's so much work to be done in this transition back, and yet, you know, I still will remain proud in the way we're doing it here in Canada, because I talk to a lot of my friends south of the border on a daily basis, and they haven't figured it out in a lot of places down there, and we seem to be at least on a track to create productivity up here.
Well, there's at least a sense that this is somewhat under control, where it just in so many parts of the United States, it's anything but that. And talking about hockey, Craig Button's going to join us at 5:05. We'll get his thoughts on the new CBA, which looks like it's getting closer and closer to being ratified. Also, the return to play. Frank Cervalli releasing some of the dates yesterday. The qualifying round beginning July 30th, the first round August 9th. The Stanley Cup final would begin September 20th. October 2nd would be the last possible game of the Stanley Cup final. And then you get into the fun of the draft and free agent frenzy, and then training camp begins November 17th and the season December 1st. Now, I should probably say it's all subject to change, because it probably will change. But there's essentially your calendar, Dave, and we can all take bets on how many of those dates end up being true. But it's nice to know that there's something ahead of us to look forward to.
At least there's a semblance. It's going to mean for a lot more work during different times of year and times off when we've never been off. I've never, ever in my life been off in November. I think since I was, 8 years old or 9 years old, you know, in the world of hockey. And it's going to create an unusual schedule. Hopefully the competitive balance, you know, will be there. And it's going to be new for all these players, too. There's a big adjustment to be made, and really intriguing to see what carries teams forward now. And the use of the word team is often overused in right. chemistry and how it forms together. Never, ever will it have been more important than it will be through this fall.
So there is some hope that everything would be ratified by the end of tomorrow, and that training camps can begin July 13th, which is Monday. And then they can do the travel to the hubs, and we can get going in Edmonton and Toronto. We also talked about how NBA teams are arriving in Orlando, and the Toronto Raptors doing that today. And they hope to get into their first team practices this weekend. But tonight, there's a game. It's an intra-squad game. I'm pretty sure I know which team's going to win. It features the Blue Jays versus the Blue Jays. And when we return, Gregor Chisholm is going to join us with more on that as the Blue Jays continue to get their 2020 season underway. Overdrive continuing here on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, but also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe with Dave Poole in the 4 o'clock hour. Brought to you by LeaseBusters. They will rescue you from your car lease. LeaseBusters. Heroic? Maybe. Helpful? Totally. People would love to take over your car lease for your lease relief. Go to LeaseBusters.com. The Toronto Blue Jays are in action tonight, Pooley. Matt Shoemaker expected to pitch five innings, which is a lot for a pitcher who, I guess he's been throwing, but hasn't really been throwing innings of any kind of consequence. But also, Austin Martin, the first-round pick, who yesterday signed a deal that was worth $7 million over his slot value, will be part of the 60-man taxi roster. So that has a lot of fans excited, and I'm sure it has our next guest excited. Gregor Chisholm from Toronto Star. He's their baseball columnist. How are you, Gregor?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
We're great. We are excited to actually hear about baseball being played. I know it's an intra-squad game, but if I'm listening to Charlie Montoyo, the manager, I guess I shouldn't ask you how good the Blue Jays are going to be. It's how responsible are the Blue Jays going to be, because that will lead to their success, won't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what Charlie said yesterday, was that there, you know, there's his message to the Blue Jays going into this is, you know, there's going to be two types of teams that go through this season. They're going to be the teams that, you know, find reasons to complain about the protocols that are in place. The ones that try to bend the rules a little bit, and then probably end up getting sick as a result, and you risk the quarantine issue. And then there are other teams who just accept this as the reality of the situation, and that, you know, these are trying times, and that you do things a little bit differently than the way you did before. And so, you know, that's what they're looking for from this team, especially with the Canadian situation that they have on top of this. I mean, the Blue Jays are facing additional quarantines than anybody in the States is facing right now, and so there's a lot of things that they have to work through and a lot of regulations that they're going to have to follow. And really the only way that the Blue Jays can have any chance of pulling this off is if everybody buys in.
Gregor, we know about the reports of one player testing positive back in Dunedin, and that 12 players in total were held back because of their close contact with that player. Any information on which players aren't here in Toronto, and how, I don't know if detrimental is too strong of a word, but this is kind of you know, part of the pun, the show that you're on, overdrive for the team, and they need reps and they need practices. Do you know of any players who are an integral part of the roster who aren't in Toronto?
No, and that's part of the problem with the Blue Jays right now and Major League Baseball in general, because every team seems to be handling this very different. I mean, there are teams out there. The MLB regulations is that in order for positive tests to be revealed, players have to give consent. There are a lot of teams out there that are, you know, getting consent from their players, and making those announcements. That's why we've seen, you know, 20 to 30 guys be publicly named, over the last week or so for positive tests. The Blue Jays have, been operating under a cloak of secrecy. I mean, all we've seen so far at the Blue Jays training camp are photos that were provided by the team for training camp earlier this week. I believe the Blue Jays are the only team so far who have yet to open up their camp to the media. That's going to change tonight. So we're going to get a better idea of actually who is in the building. But no, I mean, this is going to be an issue for a while now, and it's going to lead people to kind of be piecing things together. I mean, guys are going to get placed on the injured list. The Blue Jays seem adamant about not distinguishing between the two, and so it's going to be a lot of guesswork from here on out as to the exact reasons why some guys are out and some guys aren't.
Gregor, as much as the Blue Jays training up here caught everyone by surprise when it was first announced, and looking at it, it's really the only way it could have worked in terms of teams playing up here and coming up here to travel. You had to bring a team here from the States and have it be successful. So that maybe there's even more of a magnifying glass on the success of the Blue Jays through this stretch of time to see how well it will look with teams visiting to play games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the Jays can't afford to have any mistakes with that. I mean, they need to have strict protocols for their quarantine, because if they can't keep, you know, the current team quarantined, then, you know, I don't think there's going to be much faith that, you know, visiting teams coming in here are going to follow the Canadian guidelines. So there's an awful lot of things that they have to work through. And, you know, for the most part, you know, the federal restrictions should be sufficient. I mean, there's fines of up to $750,000 for breaking quarantine. I think you can get upwards of 6 months in prison. I mean, I can't imagine too many people would actually get those maximum fines and jail time, but that is the threat that some players have been facing. But there are additional questions on top of that. I mean, I'm curious as to how You know, the guest process is going to be restricted at the hotel at Rogers Center, because it's going to be easier said than done to always necessarily. It's not like the bubble in Orlando for the NBA where people have to enter a certain way. I mean, that hotel, from my understanding, is not completely shut down. I think it's 90% basically baseball right now, but it is open a bit to the general public. And so there are certainly questions with that. You know, how do you regulate, make sure the players don't have guys, people come into their rooms and things like that? There are a lot of questions, and ultimately the team's going to have to be responsible. And, you know, Danny Jansen kind of hinted at it yesterday. The players, to a certain extent, are going to have to police themselves. And that doesn't necessarily inspire a ton of confidence. But at the same time, I think everybody's aware that one mistake and this can all go pear-shaped in a hurry.
Gregor Chisholm from the Toronto Star joining us on Overdrive. Do you have any idea of a drop-dead date in terms of hearing from the federal government whether they would allow the team to play games? When do you think a decision has to be made where they're going one way or another?
I mean, it has to come down the pipeline here soon. I mean, it's not something, I mean, basically, you know, there was like 2 or 3 days heads up for training camp, which was short notice, and that's understandable because you don't have games to schedule and all. There's ways around that you can get it. But in this situation, they need to have an answer as quickly as they possibly can. But at the same time, I mean, the feds don't always work quickly, and the feds are going to also operate on their deadlines to a certain extent as well. I mean, the Major League Baseball can't expect to get that much preferential treatment. So, you know, I think they need to get some clarity, you know, within a week. I mean, certainly you need at least a week to prepare. And other teams need a bit of notice in terms of where they're going. So they've got a bit of time here, and certainly the emphasis seems to be still, obviously, that there's a strong preference from the club, understandably so, that they want their home facilities, they want to play here, and certainly the situation in Toronto is a lot better than Florida, so that's understandable. But, I mean, the feds are going to have some difficult decisions to make as to whether or not the potential risk to public health is worth it to bring not only the Jays here, because the training camp situation is very different. It's easy to isolate one team. It's going to be a lot different when you get the cross-border traffic coming, and the Jays are going to be going to the States once a week, and other teams are going to be coming up here once a week. So there's going to be an awful lot of traffic coming through that building, unlike there is right now, where they basically just set up shop and can stay there in a quarantine environment for 2 weeks without leaving.
Gregor, I'll happily switch the conversation to actual baseball talk right now. And the Jays signing Austin Martin out of Vanderbilt. And, you know, a lot of baseball people felt he slipped to them, rated number two overall in the draft. And then maybe Baltimore makes a financial decision, a couple of arms go, and all of a sudden he's available at five. And the Jays added him to their 60-man roster. And maybe a question that I've thought about philosophically for a long time. Why can't a star baseball player step right from college after three successful years or four in the SEC, top baseball league in the country, and play Major League Baseball? It happens in all the other sports, and sometimes at an earlier age. Why is baseball so different about almost demanding or commanding that a player play in the minors before playing in the major leagues?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting components to that. I mean, some of it is undeniably service time issues. I think teams like having guys under their club control through their late 20s as opposed to their earlier 20s, just because those are their prime years and they're able to keep them around. That's certainly an issue for the union that they've been talking about for years now in terms of suppressing some of that. And then there's the other part where, I mean, pitchers are a bit of a different ballgame. I mean, just in terms of inning limits per years, and it's just a much different schedule that they deal with college. The hitters, though, I mean, it's a very interesting point. I mean, there are some guys who are able to come, who should be able to come a lot quicker. And, you know, teams have really been trying to emphasize that patient approach. And, I mean, the Jays, it's been since John Olerud, the last guy who went straight from being drafted into the major leagues. He's the only guy who's ever done it without a minor league game. I think the Blue Jays had someone in the 70s as well who went straight from the draft into the big leagues but then ended up getting sent back down. But it's just something you don't usually see. Martin, especially in this year, where there's a lot of unique circumstances, where there's no minor league season happening, there's no way he can really continue his development. There's an argument to be made that you should be making some of these guys a priority. I mean, you can say the exact same thing about Nate Pearson. Nate Pearson needs to be on the roster from day one because he has nowhere else to pitch. There's only so much you can do in inter-squad games and only so much you can do to get ready. But, you know, the whole keeping him in the minor leagues to develop doesn't carry any water this year because there is nowhere for him to develop. So, I mean, we've heard a lot about how Martin has a big league ready bat right now. And so I think there's an outside chance at some point you do see him this year. I think it's still probably going to take an injury. for him to get that opportunity. I would be very surprised if you see him early on. I think they're going to send him to the alternate training camp location eventually and have him continue to train. But, I mean, especially when you have a year where this can be a wasted year for a lot of your top prospects and a lot of minor league guys, there should be more of an emphasis to get them up here quicker, especially, you know, if the skill set really does match up with what a lot of the scouts were saying. And I mean, he was considered, you know, arguably by some people the top overall player in this year's draft class. Mm-hmm. So, if the hype matches, you know, what's been said about him, then I think he deserves that opportunity at some point this year, but it's not going to come on day one, that's for sure.
Yeah, I had a great back and forth with an SEC coach today, and he talked about the bat. I mean, it was the bat that was the difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, you watch players go through that league and the success they have in the majors, and so many great players come out of that specific league. And if there's going to be a different year and a different team, and particularly with the young stars the Jays have, plug him in and let him run with them.
Yeah.
Do something different. Yeah. Why not? Why not? It would be really fun to watch.
Yeah, and then the thing about that I really like about Martin is that he will give the Blue Jays a lineup a much different look. I mean, there for the last few years in the Blue Jays lineup, I mean, it's been all power and all nothing. There's been far too much swing and miss. There hasn't been nearly enough guys who've been getting on base at a consistent mark. It's really been an all or nothing approach for far too many guys in that lineup. I mean, power pays. You want to have it. And, you know, you want some guys in there to go with that all or nothing approach because it does pay off. But when you have seven or eight guys who are taking the exact same strategy every time they go up to the plate, it causes a lot of issues, and to a certain extent, it's also not very fun to watch. Martin is the exact opposite of that. I mean, he doesn't have a ton of power, but he's a guy who works really deep counts. He's going to have a high on-base percentage, scatters the ball all over the field. And what the Blue Jays need the most, he's extremely difficult to strike out. I mean, the Blue Jays have been leading the league for the last few years. They've been in the top five in terms of strikeouts. We've seen that narrative time and time again where they finish games consistently with more strikeouts than hits. Martin's a guy who should be able to get them in the right direction and complement, you know, the young core that they already have in place.
And he might be a nice guy to hit in front of another nice young player in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Gregor Chisholm joining us on Overdrive. I want to get your thoughts on Vladdy because it was debated on this show yesterday. And the producer of the show, his name is Al's brother. I'm sure you've heard of him. He is skeptical that Vladdy will hit at least 10 home runs this season in a 60-game season. Let's pretend like they actually are going to play 60 games. Do you think that Vladdy is going to have a big year? But I guess more importantly, are you going to side with me and Mike Johnson, who was my co-host yesterday, that he will hit at least 10 home runs?
Yeah, I think he'll get into the double digits.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I mean, the 10's a great over-under, you know, for people who like that kind of stuff. I think that's right at the kind of the sweet spot. I do expect to see more power than you saw in the second half of last season. He got himself a little bit out of whack. You know, the launch angle on his swing wasn't really working. And, you know, I realize that some people were disappointed in his performance last year, and understandably so, because he came with so much hype and people expected him to hit the ground running from day one. But, you know, we've seen baseball oftentimes doesn't work that way, and it does take people a little bit of time. This is a guy who's never really failed before in his career. Last year was as close as he's ever come to it. You know, with a guy with those type of skill sets, you'd like to think that he's going to use that to his advantage. And, you know, there are a lot of things that he worked on this offseason in terms of that. You know, I still certainly have questions about the overall fitness and how long he can stay at their base. But I'm not one of the ones who's still questioning the bat. I mean, I think he's going to bounce back this year, and I think you're going to see, you know, the exit velocity was good last year. He was putting, you know, he got some line drives, but he just wasn't doing much with them in terms of putting them over the wall and getting the loft he needs for a guy with his type of power. And I think that's going to change this year. I think you're going to see a little bit more of it.
Tonight it's the Blue Jays versus the Blue Jays. Will you get to go? Will you be in the building, Gregor?
Yeah, it's going to be my first time going through the temperature checks and all that security type stuff that they're dealing with. But yeah, no, we're getting into the ballpark around 5 o'clock, so it'll be our first chance to get an in person look at them since late March.
Do you know what the press box looks like? Is it like a couple seats in between each journalist?
Yeah, I would think so. But all I know so far is that they're moving us out of the press box actually, and I think they're moving us down into the TD comfort level, which is just one section below where the press box normally is. And I think there's a little bit more of an open-air environment there. And I think there's a little bit more space for us to be spread out. So I think they're moving us away from the cramped press box and into some, space is certainly not an issue in that ballpark, so we should be able to find some place. I mean, we're not allowed down into the field. We're not allowed to talk to anybody outside of, you know, Zoom interviews and stuff we do online. But they are letting us in to kind of watch and observe and, you know, see how the games go.
They really could just say, Section 117, that's yours. Yes. Scott Mitchell, you get Section 118. Don't look over at Gregor and bother him, okay? Give him his 15 rows and just let him be. But we're looking forward to hearing about what happens tonight and reading your work as they try to execute a 60-game season. So all the best to MLB trying to do that, and all the best to you, Gregor. Thanks for joining us here on Overdrive.
No problem. Thanks. Appreciate it.
There's Gregor Chisholm from the Toronto Star getting ready for an intra-squad game. I don't think I've ever said intra-squad as much in one show as I have today, but it is the Blue Jays versus the Blue Jays inside the Dome, where they hope to play regular season games, although that sentiment is not exactly shared by all Torontonians and Canadians in general, Pooley.
Yeah, you know, to me, and we've had this discussion before on the show, Mark, baseball would have been the perfect hub sport because of the way their spring training facilities are all set up with multiple stadiums and in close proximity to each other in Florida and in Arizona. Like, it's a perfect setup.
Was that not the first hub that we heard about? I think
it was, but that's when they were talking about playing a full season.
Yeah.
And they rebuked right away, and the players said, no way we're going into a hub for a full season. Mm-hmm. And then as it got chopped and negotiated and, you know, bartered back
and forth. And Arizona and Florida got worse.
No question they did. You know, early on, Arizona wasn't even talked about. It wasn't even discussed, good or bad. It just wasn't discussed. And, you know, but it's funny when you talk about, you know, being in different sections in the Sky Dome. When I started pro scouting, the Chicago Blackhawks were drawing about 6,000 in the United Center. And we'd
and
be sitting
in
the second, and it's a huge arena, like close to 23,000 seats. And we'd be sitting there in the second period. One of the scouts would say, I'm going to go grab section 202 for the third. And he'd go down, he'd sit right in the middle of section 202, and he'd be waving up, and he'd be the only single person in section 202. So if you want to socially distance,
you can do it.
Sky Dome, you can socially distance without a question.
Just to think of spreading everyone out in that building, 50,000 capacity down to whatever 23 journalists. It's you're like, we were talking about MLS and watching that last night. You know, if they do whatever, if they play games there or the Trop, doesn't matter, it's going to have such a strange feel and sound to it, and you are going to get sounds that you have never heard watching a baseball game. And you really, even going to a game, you don't get it because, you know, the ambiance of the crowd and people sitting around you. So it'll be let's hope it's the only time that we do get this experience, but it will be something different.
But just watch the way camera angles are working. Even MLS last night, they hardly show the crowd. I mean, they hardly got up to it. They focused on the ball. They focused on a smaller, you know, part of the pitch or whatever. And it was pretty well done.
Speaking of things being different, the NFL, as much as they like it or not, are going to have to conduct things a little differently this season. They have one proposed plan about how players can better social distance, and the players aren't exactly buying into it. We'll have those details when we return here on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also up on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Overdrive continuing. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes, just trying to keep the bus on the road alongside Dave Pullen. It was swerving a little bit during that interview with Gregor Chisholm. And when I mean it was swerving, I mean the lights turned off on me. And for those on TSN 4, they saw me in the dark. I don't know if that's a sign from the higher ups or those who work here at TSN, but we got through it, Pooley.
I don't know what kind of studio you're operating in, but I'm in a faux flex home studio that you can purchase online. It just comes in one piece. You know, it's got books.
Looks
and
great.
Stuff. Yeah, it's just, Duthie referred to it as my flex symbol because I had a couple things up behind me, including my claret jug, which I won in a little trip over to Scotland. Yes,
nice.
That's my one of my most prized possessions, as a matter of fact.
How did you win that?
A very heated, it was like a 9-day event. We played a whole bunch of courses, and every night when we came back, the scores were posted on like official, those big Titleist scoreboards.
Oh.
There were only 8 of us.
Like the face-off.
But it was all official, and the scores were posted with the fancy markers on the board, and every night, it was great. It was a great trip. Terrific trip.
Well, NFL teams will be taking a trip, at least this is the plan, two games via a bus the day of a game. The other plan in place is that players will not be allowed to exchange jerseys, which is, you see that all the time. Players today have not reacted very well to it. As you can see there on TSN4, the NFL has banned jersey exchanges in 2020 as the league attempts to play through the coronavirus pandemic. The fact that players are calling this a joke, Richard Sherman being one of them, Deshaun Watson another, big name players, can't be a surprise considering that the NFL does want them to go helmet to helmet. Well, not helmet to helmet, but pad to pad, physical contact for 60 minutes, and then don't get close to each other afterwards and exchange jerseys.
Well, they've made it a point. Even your social interaction afterwards is absolutely has to be 6 feet apart.
Mm.
And, when this all started and the social distancing, the 6 feet, I talked to a couple of general managers and said, man, this fits some guys' games pretty well, being 6 feet away from everybody in the other team,
depends.
This could work out.
And that could be
some guys would like that social distancing.
Well, okay, that's a compliment to a few offensive players. Like, if you're a running back or a wide receiver, that's that. Hey, Barry Sanders did that for a whole career.
Barry Sanders is the perfect example of what you just said, where he'd go straight at somebody 6 feet away and he'd go backwards.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great...
He was planning for the pandemic like decades ago.
He's still social distance every time he ran the ball.
Yeah.
Just from the entire defense on the other side.
But if you're a cornerback or a linebacker and a coach says that, that's...
You're involved.
It's a bad scouting report. So
think of the piles. Think of the pig piles with like 7-8 guys all jammed in on each other. And oh boy.
Yeah.
No social distancing going on there at all.
Well, I know Kaz keeps bringing this up. Like what you see when there's a fumble, right? Like it's mass chaos.
It's the ultimate pile.
It's
300 pounders.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the point, right? I'm amazed that more people don't get hurt in that sport just in the pileups. Mm-hmm. People jumping on top of you. Because when a great big guy falls on top of you, it hurts.
Yeah.
Well, when 6 of them do, I can't imagine that it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And the NFL is another sport. You talk a lot about leadership. And, it's one thing to be a leader on a team in a hub and to tell, your colleagues, your teammates, everyone on the team, let's be responsible. Let's make sure that we stay in this hub. But if you're on an NFL team and you're... Unless something happens between now and September, they're kind of living the same lives. That takes it to another level where you're telling guys, go home and that's it.
It's very, I think it's more controlled when you travel in the NFL. The way those guys travel, Mark, they take a plane, they get off, they go straight to the hotel, they go straight to the game the next morning, they play the game and they go home. And they don't socialize in other cities very often at all.
Mm-hmm.
They go in the day before the game, the night before the game. They have meetings right up through the night. They get up and eat. They play the game, and they go home. And don't forget, a lot of those games are at 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, right? Other than, I guess you might have a Sunday night game or a Monday night game with a team or two, but, one or two teams on the road a week in terms of that environment. But that's very different. And it's, even their weeks of practice, they basically spend each day, every day at the practice facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost think in a weird way that football is much more controllable than baseball is for sure, or basketball is. And, hockey and basketball are doing something different than baseball is, and something again than football is. But football has the luxury of waiting to see how everybody else does it and how successful it is as well.
Do you think, like, there seems to be advantages to starting the NFL season right on time or trying to delay it? Because there's a risk on both sides of things. Because of you don't know what the second wave is going to be like.
Yeah, you don't.
You know, you start in September, and we've already heard from the Ravens that if they're allowed to have fans, I think it's 14,000 would be the max that they will allow in their building. So you're not exactly getting a full house, and you probably shouldn't have anything close to a full house, or I know you shouldn't. Right. But that'll be tricky, what you know, in terms of the logistics of trying to have a 17-game season.
And everybody's hope, you know, and don't forget, in a 17-game season, you only go on the road 8 or 9 times. So you've got those 8 or 9 trips, you know, and which is, baseball's going to do it a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And you know, but the whole thing about fans going in the building is incredibly optimistic that we're going to be in a better place in September than we are now. But if you look back to March, we thought we'd be in a lot better place by
In certain parts of the world we are, but you know, some important ones we're not. The 4 o'clock hour of the show is brought to you by LeaseBusters. LeaseBusters will get you out of your car lease today. It's easy as pie, a piece of cake. Avoid penalties and early termination fees. Visit LeaseBusters.com. Craig Button joins us when we return on Overdrive.